of the Marshall Space Flight Center, Dr. Robert Gilruth, Director of MSC, Dr. George Miller, Associate Administrator for Manned Spaceflight, Lieutenant General Phillips, Director of the Apollo Program. We'll have very short statements and then questions and answers. Dr. Miller.
Apollo 9 was as successful a flight as any of us could ever have wished for, as well as being as successful as any of us have ever seen. I think that that all of us were in the program were concerned that this was the first time that we had tried out this complex new vehicle, the lunar module, and I think that all of us at this point in time are very, very pleased indeed with the performance and look forward to the successful completion now of the Apollo program in the next several months. Sam, I guess.
The purpose for which we flew Apollo 9 in our sequence of missions that will lead us to a manned lunar landing appears, from all indications, to have been fully satisfied and, in many ways, more than satisfied. We have about 2 weeks of very hard work to do to get the telemetry data in from around the world, to analyze it fully and carefully, to ensure that the real-time indications were in fact telling us that everything worked as it should and that there's nothing in that data which would lead us to revise our future plans. We have several days of debriefing with the flight crew who played such a key part in the maneuvering of these intricate space vehicles and whose reports to us will be necessary and important in our evaluating the final total results of this mission. I'm exceedingly pleased with the results that we've achieved on this mission. It appears that we have satisfied all of the purposes that we set out to achieve with the mission and that it now fills its place in our sequence of missions that will lead us to a lunar landing.
I want to say about the same as what Dr. Gilruth says. I think all the people participating in this venture ought to be congratulated and commended. As to the launch vehicle, we had a successful launch. We got the spacecraft well in the Earth orbit, and the launch operation of the Kennedy Space Flight Center really functioned well again. We were exactly on time. I guess it was 00026 seconds late, something like this. We had some small anomalies, as we had in all flights, but we are not too much concerned about them, and we are working them out at the present time, going through all the records. This is all what I can say as to the launch vehicle.
Thank you. We'll take questions. Please wait for the microphones. Bill Hines in the second row.
Dr. Miller mentioned in his opening remarks the successful completion of the Apollo program in the next several months, and I'd like to get him to tell us what will mark the completion of the Apollo program as Mercury 9 and Gemini 12 mark the completion of those programs.
The completion of the goal that was established by President Kennedy in 1961 of a manned lunar landing and return will represent the completion of that part of the Apollo program leading to the first manned lunar landing. We have, of course, left equipment left in the process of manufacture and in our inventory, which we expect to utilize in flights, in the case of the Apollo Saturn equipment, Saturn V equipment, and flights to the moon for the beginning of the exploration of that other planet.
Well, I understand you then to say that Apollo 11, if that's the one, The first landing flight will be the last flight in Project Apollo. Then what are you going to call the ALSEP flights?
Bill, we have not determined whether we're going to change the name of the program. We surely are not going to change the name of the hardware. And so when I said this was the last flight in the Apollo leading to the manned lunar landing is what I really meant.
Then just a final question that I think is susceptible to a yes or no answer. Will the first lunar landing flight be the last flight in what you are calling Project Apollo?
Not at this time.
Roy Neal.
Dr. Miller, assuming that the data, as you study it during the next couple of weeks, shows no surprises, what would you anticipate the next flight in the Apollo program to be?
Our present plan calls for what we call the Apollo F mission, which is a repeat of the D mission, the Apollo 9 mission, in lunar orbit. In other words, to again try the lunar landing module in an actual simulation of the landing, but stopping short of the landing itself. That mission would be carried out in May.
John Lennon.
I'd be pleased to. I'd like to finish my answer to Roy Neal's question, however. We are going to evaluate the results of the Apollo 9 flight quite carefully. We will be, in the course of the next 2 weeks, arriving at a final decision as to the flight mission profile for Apollo 10. That decision will be made on March the 24th. I just said the most likely. Now, to answer your question, yes, I had the opportunity of testifying before the Manned Space Flight Subcommittee of the House Aeronautics and Space Committee. Space and Science Committee. The Congressman Teague, who is the chairman of that subcommittee, was concerned about how we were going to use the remaining equipment in Apollo. And we have, in the past several months, as it's become clear that the Apollo program itself was proceeding more successfully than any of us could really have hoped 6 months or a year ago, been looking quite carefully and quite closely at the things that can be done in the next several years to begin the early exploration of the moon using essentially this equipment. In particular, we have equipment for the scientific payloads for the first four of the Apollo vehicles. We have a what we call a lunar surface experiment package, which will be flown on these first four vehicles, and each one of those will be flown into one of the sites close to or in the Apollo landing zone. Two of them into Maria, and then two into the Highland areas. In the course of that series of flights, we expect to develop the understanding and the capability to be able to pinpoint land at points of unique scientific interest outside of the Apollo landing zone. These pinpoint landings will permit us to land within perhaps a kilometer or several kilometers of interesting natural geologic features. And in particular, we expect to land alongside of some of the rills on the lunar surface, to land alongside of some of the craters, to examine whether or not there is activity near Schrader's Valley, for example, to look for the red clouds that we've seen here on Earth. There are six such sites that have been chosen from many as being of outstanding scientific interest. Those six sites, then, will use up all of the equipment we presently have in the Apollo program.
Mark Bloom. Dr. Miller, with the limited information you now have in hand on Apollo 9, are you currently in favor of flying Apollo 10 as an F mission?
Well, I don't have any feeling that we ought not to fly Apollo 10 as an F mission.
Pete Bulbin.
I wonder if we could clarify that. Is there, Dr. Miller, is there any doubt in your mind
There would be an Apollo 10 mission?
Well, if there weren't going to be a series of meetings to very carefully examine the results of this data and where we stand in the program, I'd say that there is always a possibility that we might decide that there were some objectives that we hadn't accomplished that we ought to accomplish in some other way. That's why we're having the series of meetings to reach a very clear and reasoned decision.
Dr. Miller, at the present time, what would be the advantage of skipping 10 or skipping the mission without landing and going directly to a landing? What do you gain by doing that?
Well, I didn't plan to skip it, but if you did skip it, of course, you would save one flight.
Save? Money you're talking about or confidence? Or?
It saves money, it saves risk. Saves a number of things before landing on the moon.
I'd like to make a short observation here about the ongoing program, and that, of course, is something that we all realize that we haven't yet landed on the moon. We're going to learn a lot in that operation, and no doubt the inputs from the flights that land, starting with the first one, are going to be extremely important as to just how extensive and to what degree we're able actually to carry out the exploration flights that the scientists would like us to make. And this is still a very big hurdle in my mind, that the landing on the moon is something we've been planning for and training and pointing for a long time. We have high confidence. There still remains some question in my mind just how accurately we'll be able to follow up with this and how we're going to feel about it after these initial landings. So that these inputs have to be weighed, of course, very carefully in determining just what it is we do afterwards in the Apollo exploration program.
Go ahead, John Lennon.
Dr. Miller, with the facts you have in hand now, what would you give for odds on dropping the F mission and going on to the G?
I don't think that we have any way of assessing the odds on that particular one. I'd say it was very low probability.
And a second follow-up question. Would you say that after the landing, that we will then be moving out of a technical feasibility stage and into a scientific stage in the Apollo program? Is this the...
I think Dr. Gilruth put it quite accurately, that each time we carry out one of these missions, we reassess where we are and what we can do next. We are going to be tending to move to greater scientific content in each mission as we develop our capabilities, assuming that things go very well. I guess one thing that we all ought to recognize is that we have been remarkably successful thus far in the Apollo program. The hardware has worked better than anyone should have expected, and better than any of us did expect, so that we are able to move forward much more rapidly than you might have been able to speculate a year ago. And I think that's a great tribute to the great care and the very extensive ground testing that has been characteristic of the development of this particular set of hardware. It's probably, as Frank Borman was saying this morning, the most perfect set of equipment that man has ever built.
Rudy.
General Phillips, I understand that some time ago there was a consideration of doing a command module active rendezvous on the F mission. Now that you've done as well as you have on this one, is there any likelihood you'd put that back in and do a command module rendezvous as well as the LM rendezvous?
No, I doubt very much if we would decide that we had reason to do a CSM active rendezvous. All indications are that we will go on with the plan as it now stands, involving the LM active rendezvous and docking.
Well, I thought as late as last Friday we had sort of finally wiped out this question of whether there'd be a landing on Apollo 10.
But it seems to me the press has quit raising that question now, and Dr. Miller has started raising it. And I get a distinct feeling that you're trying to tell us something about skipping, about this having gone so well that you might skip the 50,000-foot goal and go to a landing on this. Can we try this once more, one more time?
Could I comment first and then give Dr. Miller an opportunity to say what he would say then? Our mission sequence we've been following was laid out now many, many months ago. I've forgotten how long ago. Maybe as long as 2 years, a year and a half at least. And in our evaluation of the things that we needed to do before we committed ourselves to a landing, it was our conclusion over past months that the F mission was the best way to bridge the gap between the mission that we've just landed and the landing itself, and to satisfy the needs for experience and demonstration of maneuvers and obtainment of data that we consider important before we commit to the landing. That vehicle was rolled out to the pad this last Tuesday, the 11th of March. It's equipped to fly the F mission. Tom Stafford is well along in his training to fly the F mission. It's my own view that if the data and crew reports from Apollo 9 continue to substantiate that we've done what we needed to do in the 9 mission and are satisfied fully with the results, that I will recommend that we proceed with the planned F mission. And we expect to have that matter all settled, as Dr. Miller said, on the 24th of March.
That presumably answers the question, Ev. Actually, I'll add one more thought, and that is the Apollo 10 surely isn't equipped for landing on the moon, nor would we plan to land it there. If we were going to go for a lunar landing, we'd skip it. And we do not at the present time intend to skip it.
Al Rossiter in the second row here.
Dr. Miller, did I understand you to say there are now 4 lunar landing missions planned beyond number 11? And what will the time intervals be?
We have equipment for 4. We're doing the planning for all 10 vehicles beyond Apollo 11. You've got to recognize that Apollo 11 may not, however, end up with a lunar landing. And we have yet to go through Apollo 10, and we have yet to successfully complete Apollo 11 before we have to worry about what we do after Apollo 11.
Mark Bloom on the other side.
General Phillips, now that we have splashdown, can you tell us the percentage of objectives, 100 and what percent completed?
The mission fully achieved all of its primary objectives, and in numerical count, we accomplished more than the planned number of detailed test objectives. We hadn't really calculated what the number is, but it's we accomplished more in this mission than we set out to accomplish. And I think that should be apparent to all who've watched the mission in progress.
Well, you said on Apollo 7 it was 101%, and Apollo 8 even better. Is this even better than that?
Oh, I think, you know, it gets somewhat subjective.
Mark, isn't perfection good enough?
Ethan, one more in the back there.
Dr. Miller, could you be any more specific in terms of when these scientific missions might be flown, and could you tell us anything about what kind of applications they might have?
Well, we were discussing with the Congress the need for funding in order to buy the equipment required for the last 6 missions, because the present program does not have funds in it for the scientific equipment for those last 6 of Apollo Saturn V vehicles. And depending on when the funding becomes available will surely depend on when we are able to carry out the mission, so we can't predict when that will happen. There are, therefore, things other than our actual flight experience that limit us in this area. With respect to the kinds of things we will do, we would expect to be able to emplace on the lunar surface a network of something like 10 seismographs so that we could have a network for examining the internal operation of the moon, if you will. We would expect to be able to place a series of heat measuring probes that permit you to measure the temperature change from the surface down inside the moon. We would expect to be able to have a set of instruments of various kinds that would permit us to determine rather more accurately the actual environment on the lunar surface, how much gas is really there and how it varies with the effect of the sun and the Earth during the night and the day. So we learn a great deal about, from the geophysical instrumentation, about the lunar environment itself and its interior. From the standpoint of the geological investigations, we would anticipate being able to take some gamut of pictures that would provide us with information about the surface to collect samples from each one of these various areas. Particularly, we'd like to get a good set of pictures of the cross-section of the side of one of the impact craters, for example, to learn what the history of the moon really is. We also are planning to carry some additional equipment in the spacecraft service module in orbit and carry out some observations of the lunar surface from camera equipment and particularly infrared and ultraviolet and X-ray, gamma ray equipment on board the spacecraft to get a better feeling from orbit of the variations in the moon.
John Lennon.
Could you give us an idea of what kind of money you're talking about in the coming fiscal year for the scientific applications you just mentioned?
Well, we're talking about something like $100 million in that year, because of course that's most of the cost of this scientific equipment, but it also includes some additional funds for mobility on the surface.
Victor,
what does that mobility mean?
Mobility. It's a new spacesuit, constant volume spacesuit, which permits you to move, to walk quite normally and to move around the surface very freely.
Just on this a little bit more, is the basis for this set of proposals to Congress the summer study last summer on lunar surface exploration? Is that what you base these proposals on?
Actually, it's more nearly based upon the work of the STAC Winter Study Group in California last December. But of course, it draws upon all of the preceding studies. It's trying to use our equipment most effectively for carrying out this kind of exploratory work. This is early exploration. It isn't going to end us end there, I'm sure.
A few months ago, we were talking about launching on 2 month centers in this calendar year and perhaps 3 manned launchings a year thereafter. Is this still a reasonable program for us to speculate about?
Well, I think that the schedule we're talking about, it depends upon when we accomplish the lunar landing. We would expect to stretch out the flight schedule after the first landing to permit us to make modifications and understand the results from the first landing before we go to the next one. But roughly between 2 and 3 a year is what we're talking about in the period after the first landing.
Thank you.
Okay, the next briefing will follow in about 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay.